a passionate instigator and dynamic problem solver, Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, the host of the Dr. Kevin Radio Show, will be taking you outside the box, behind the curtain, and identifying the load of BS we are fed every day. And now, Dr. Kevin.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Dr. Kevin Show here on Ohm Times, where we're changing the world, wait for it, one ohm at a time. Here on the Dr. Kevin Show, we give you a wide and diverse variety of guests. Certainly today's guest falls into that category. You never know what to expect on the Dr. Kevin Show unless you read the description of the show for the week. But outside of that, you never know. And here on the Dr. Kevin Show, we are a live call-in show. So feel free to call in at any point at 202-570-7057. Again, that's 202-570-7057. Or you can go to facebook.com/mydrkevin. That's facebook.com/mydrkevin. Please like the page. I'm a likable guy. And right posted at the top of the page is the description for today's guest. Also, the guest website and how to get in touch with him as well. This is also a place where you can leave comments. So if you say, I don't know about calling in or whatever, you can post a comment on the timeline and we will, as long as it's respectful, bring it on air. The other thing is if you're listening to this other than 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on a Thursday night, then you're listening to one of our many replays. And if you do that, you can't call in. Don't call in. My producer will not like me if you call in to speak to me on Sunday morning at 2 a.m. I will guarantee it. But you can still go to facebook.com/mydrkevin. You can find the post about today's show. You can still put comments or questions, especially questions, and either I will reach out to the guest and get the guest's response or get the guest to go on to the page himself and answer the questions. So just because you're not listening to it in the first round doesn't mean you still can't participate. Remember, most of life is showing up. It's showing up, taking an action, speaking out, doing something. Now, we've changed the format, the overall monthly format in 2020, and I just want to quickly remind you of that, which is I'm only doing 1 to 2 guests a month, and then the other Thursdays, the first Thursday will be Through the Spiritual Lens with Matt Connerton from Matt Connerton Unleashed, where we talk about things going on in the world. The second one is Thoughtful Thursday with Reverend Lori Powers Otto, where we share stories and ideas and people who are inspirational, motivational, who make you think, people who are out there being thoughtful in the world. And the second to last Thursday of every month, we have our planetary influence with astrologer Rob Stewart telling you what's coming up for the incoming sign as signs change around the third week of the month and what to expect going on in the air. Now I've caught you up on all of that. We're going to talk about today's hot topic. For my longstanding guests, you know what that is. Listeners, you know what that is. For those of you who might not, it is something that either warms the cockles of my heart or gets me hot under the collar. I will introduce today's topic, then I will introduce today's guest, and then I will give the guest a chance to comment on today's topic. You know, there's a hotbed of all sorts of issues out there that have to do with politics these days. Don't groan. I heard you groan out there. But this is actually not a political hot under the collar, but it happened over a political posting. So I shared the post about how many bills were sitting dead in the Senate. And something like 275 of these bills had bipartisan support. And Senator Mitch McConnell, affectionately known as Moscow Mitch, will not bring them to the Senate. Okay. Well, that's just not okay. I posted it. And then instead of addressing the issue that we need to fix, this is a sign that democracy is broken. That, you know, Congress should not be holding hostage bills that will positively affect the American people out of spite or out of partisan politics. So then somebody posted that, well, Harry Reid back in, I don't know, 1653 or something, somewhere, it wasn't last year, it wasn't during the Obama administration, it wasn't, I don't know when it was, but he held, in the House of Representatives, he held a bunch of books, the things, and talked about the hypocrisy. And this is the hot under the collar. Because this actually was a friend, and who her and I had agreed not to post on each other's political posts. She thinks Trump is the second coming. I think that Trump is the Antichrist. I make no, you know, thing. I have now call evangelicals evil-gelicals. And with that, I've made myself very clear. But she's a longstanding friend, and I go, we have to agree to disagree, and we cannot post on each other's political posts. We just have to let that part of it go and let our friendship live in other areas. And she agreed to that. Well, she basically called me a hypocrite. And I talked about the hypocrisy of it. Well, I was an independent for a long time. And the hypocrisy was, and it's not that it is hypocritical to point out when something is currently going wrong. It's hypocritical to have a fit and say it was wrong when the other guys did it, whether the other guys are Democrats or Republicans. This is not about the politics. It's about the fact that Washington in of itself, White House and Congress, is broken. And the American people are being used as the kickball in a soccer game for them to hold power and leverage and make money and do all sorts of things. And both sides play. But the hypocrisy, which I see running rampant today, is the hypocrisy of, well, it doesn't make any difference that my guy did it because your guy did it. Yeah, but your guy's doing it now. And if I had been on social media posting when Harry Reid did that and that came to my attention, I would have blasted the Democrats. It's just simply not right. But we're hiding or we're making excuses for unacceptable behavior by, at some point, your guy did it. Yeah, but you hated it when my guy did it. And it's not about my guy or your guy. It's about what's right and what's wrong. And hypocrisy is another way that the Trump supporters change the conversation instead of owning up when something wrong is happening. And I'll call wrong. I don't care whether you're a Democrat, an independent, a Republican. I don't care if you're a tsetse fly. If it's wrong, it's wrong. I'm calling it. You can explain to me why it's not wrong, and I will listen, and we can talk about it. But don't change the conversation. And that has made me hot under the collar. So, that being said, I will now wake up tonight's guest, who I think fell asleep in my tirade. Joshua Shea. Joshua Shea is a recovering pornography addict and the author of The Addiction No One Will Talk About, How I Let My Pornography Addiction Hurt People and Destroy Relationships. It was released in January of 2018, and his latest book, He's a Porn Addict, Now What?, was just released in December. Shea has appeared on over 100 podcasts, television, and radio shows using his personal story to promote the idea that porn addiction spans all demographics, and those with a problem should seek help before it's too late. His website is recoveringpornaddict.com. There is a fuller write-up that is on facebook.com/bydrkevin. Joshua, welcome. How are you?
I am doing very well. Thank you for inviting me on the show tonight, Dr. Kevin.
Absolutely. We connected on LinkedIn. I saw what you said something about what you did, and I immediately reached out and said, you, I want on my show, because I agree. This is a very under-discussed, kept hidden, under-the-carpet topic. But before we get there, you get to weigh in on tonight's hot topic. What do you think? Is Washington broken? Should anybody be pointing the finger of hypocrisy right now? What are your thoughts, Joshua?
I know that a lot of people think America is broken because what is happening in Washington. And I would actually flip that and say Washington is broken because what is happening in America. And I think there's a big difference in that, where we are starting to become tribe-like again. And really, is there any morals or is there any rules when it comes to war? No, it's about winning. So, you know, with a group like the Republicans and the conservatives who really turned in their morality card in supporting Trump, well, that was a big card they had for a very long time that they could, you know, wave around. Much like a lot of people saw the Democrats in embracing a lot of the very super liberal ideology, kind of leaving out the middle American, you know, straight white guy, as you might call them, back in the Obama administration. And for somebody like me who has covered politics for years and years as a journalist, and really taught myself how to be very middle of the road, basically worked myself into being a libertarian, standing back and watching this makes me laugh, because I don't think that those commentators on the MSNBC website or the commentators on the Fox News website truly recognize just how much alike they sound. To somebody like me, to whom politics is really not a blood sport, you know, and I've got people in my family who are on both sides of it, and I can watch the ping pong ball go back and forth at holiday gatherings. You know, it's funny because I will bring up, do you two recognize you sound exactly alike? And it just matters what year is on the calendar to determine whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. Because it's really just about being in your silo, being in your tribe, and making sure that your team wins. And looking at America and looking at Washington as team sports, that's never going to work, because you don't want your world to be one where there are clearly defined winners and losers.
Well, you know, one of our top conversations on the first Thursday of the month through the spiritual lens is usually about politics. Matt Connerton, the other co-host, the co-host for that show with me, does a drive time, highly political show 5 days a week. And so I invite you any first Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. to just call in as a guest and kick some stuff around with us. I'm impressed by your answer. That's always another voice is always welcome. And we can always mention that, you know, you have the porn addict stuff, but I'm offering you that invitation to keep in mind.
I appreciate that.
I think that, you know, which came first, the chicken and the egg? Did America become very tribal and did the politics follow? Or did the politicians learn that when you keep people tribal and at each other's throats, that they can get away with more? They can slip through more bills. They can avoid more meaningful, substantive conversations about things that aren't working. And, you know, in this particular case, I've actually put out and advocated, you know, there should be a law that something goes from one house to the other. They have 30 days to get it on the floor. It has to be on the floor in 30 days. I also am a single bill guy. You shouldn't have any add-ons. You shouldn't have anything, any riders, nothing that basically is the way that we keep the status quo when we know that the majority of Americans want this or that. And what happens is if a bill comes, somebody sticks something on it, so it goes away. And that's the part that I talk about being broken. I think that they've learned to work around the setup in a way that is counterproductive to the good of the American people. I'm talking the actual systems in place.
I would definitely agree with you there, but then the irony is that it's these exact people who need to agree to change things, and why would they change things? Because it works for them.
Yep. Well, it's always difficult, and we're always, you know,
all great legislation happens in a courtroom.
Yep. Yep. That's,
you know,
an
that's,
interesting
that's what
statement.
I've learned
I like
over the
that.
Years. All great legislation comes from the courts.
So we've got about 3 minutes now, though I'm loving this conversation, but we have about 3 minutes now before we had come to our first break. So I'm going to open up the first question to you, and if we need to, we can continue it in the second one. But I want to make sure that we have time, because I was, again, as soon as you reached out to me, I'm like, yep, we need to talk about this subject. So I don't want to get too much into the politics. So Joshua, where would you about, well, you can do it about anything. I always tell my guests, I don't care. You can take my listeners outside the box about white eggs versus brown eggs and which ones are better for you. I'm assuming you probably want to do it about your work and your books, but you don't have to, just so you know. So where would you like to take my listeners outside the box?
Well, I think that I will stick with the porn addiction topic. And what I'd love to do is introduce the idea to the listeners that porn addiction, if we don't take care of this and start to develop a strategy to fight it, that it is going to be our next great healthcare issue. And we can look at two healthcare issues of the 80s and 90s for how things can go very right or very wrong. And we can either be proactive or reactive, but we need to start talking about porn addiction as a legitimate problem, or we're looking at some very scary, scary outcomes in this country based on statistics that, like my first book said, nobody wants to talk about.
So now you've piqued my curiosity there, because I see the damage of porn addiction. And, you know, there's, and it's happening all over the world. You know, it's not just a uniquely American issue. But when you say health crisis, what makes it, unless you're talking about a mental health crisis, what makes it a health crisis? That's the connection point I'd like to hear about.
Okay. Well, you know, it's one of these things where addiction is addiction is addiction. And we have labeled things like the opioid crisis to be a major healthcare crisis. And I believe that this is going to mirror the opioid crisis as far as people's lives being affected. You cannot have a nation of people who are sexually ill, who are not able to function sexually healthy, and have a healthy nation. We can look at this if you just want to take one example. Look at the Catholic Church over the last 30 years. There is a large percentage of people within that organization who are not sexually healthy. And we can talk another time why that is, but they have shown how what happens when a large organism, a large organization becomes sexually unhealthy. And that's what's going to happen to our country and to our world as a whole. What are going to be the specific effects? I'm not exactly sure, but these numbers are crazy. And the amount of, you know, you tell me what the world looks like when, you know, 50% of men can't get an erection, or when 25% of women, are completely uninterested in being with a man or a woman because they're addicted to pornography. And with that addiction comes unhealthy behaviors, other addictions, social inadequacies. People who are addicts are not healthy people all around. They're not people who generally do well in society. They're not generally people who contribute to society. And if we have this happening with pornography, as I believe is going to happen unless we take care of it, because of the statistics that are now just starting to come up because it's finally being studied, we may be in some real trouble. And, you know, I could be wrong. I could be overstating this, but I would rather say the sky is falling and have people take a look up than just keep walking around.
Well, I don't actually think that you are. And I hear the sound of the music. We're going into
it's
our
the
first
music.
And I am here with Joshua Shea. His latest book is He's a Porn Addict. Now What? And we'll be right back here on the Dr. Kevin Show.
Conscious Media for Conscious Minds. Om Times. Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at AscendingHearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the second segment of the Dr. Kevin Show here on Om Times. Remember, we are now a live call-in show, so you can call in at 202-570-7057. If you'd like to ask a question of myself or tonight's guest, Joshua Shea, or you can go to facebook.com/mydrkevin. Make sure you like the page. I'm a likable guy. And you can post your question there. And as long as it is respectful, we will bring it on air for you. Joshua is a recovering pornography addict. His first book is The Addiction Nobody Will Talk About, How I Let My Pornography Addiction Hurt People and Destroy Relationships, which was released in January 2018. And his latest book, which was just released in December, is He's a Porn Addict, Now What? And you can go to and find out more about Joshua and his work and his books at recoveringpornaddict.com. I don't think you're doing The Sky Is Falling, Joshua. And I think that there are some serious consequences and different things that come about. But I'm going to move on to the behind the curtain segment, and we're going to see how this weaves together. What I do want to say is that I question how much the access to porn on so many easy to get technical devices and our addiction to technology, which has led to oftentimes an inability to connect, has made this thing explode the way it is. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I was the old school addict before the internet was around. I had to find the video store that would rent me the dirty movies when I was a teenager and look the other way. And, you know, I had to find the convenience store that would sell me the Playboy and then sell me the beer because I was also an alcoholic at the exact same time. And it was harder to get at this stuff. But I think that's the only thing that was stopping people, because you can go back to the earliest of cave paintings and you'll find pornography on the wall. You can go back and look at Egyptian and Phoenician, you know, artifacts and vases, and some of the stuff they painted on those were absolutely pornographic. And, you know, not to mention, you know, things like Game of Thrones, which actually depict, you know, the Roman and Greek times very, very accurately. You know, we've always had a
fascination with sexuality since, you know, we could draw on a cave wall. I think that the ease of use just simply comes with the fact that we have this technology now, that it breaks down a lot of barriers of access, which in turn does make more people try, does make more people addicted to it, does cause more problems. But I don't think that the technology itself can be blamed. I think the fact that there is absolutely no education surrounding it is what should be blamed for the fact that we are creating more addicts than ever before.
Yeah, and I, you know, I'm completely aware of, you know, like pornography has always existed and it's always happened. And what's the line between a kid with curiosity versus a porn addict, because curiosity is a natural thing, especially in puberty. I think my question more about the technology had to do, are people who, because not that the technology is to blame per se, but the technology plays the role that there's a larger percentage of people getting drawn into it, not only because of ease of access, but with all of our technology, we have less connection to each other as people and have a harder time maneuvering some of the mating rituals that would make somebody decide porn is just easier. I guess that was part of what I was thinking, that go ahead.
I'd say you're talking about two different things, and you're right and you're not right. And on the part that I think you're right on is that it has expanded the ability for people to get to it. If you look at statistics, the group that isn't really increasing very much percentage-wise are middle-aged white men. Because pornography has always been geared towards us. Pornography has always been available for us. There is less shame of a, you know, 30, 40-year-old white man walking into an adult bookstore, an adult movie theater. And the material that they have sold historically is for that audience. If you look at the statistics of the demographic groups that are now reporting the biggest percentage gains of porn addiction, you're talking about white women, you're talking about black men, you're talking about members of the LDS church, members of the Catholic church. These are people who in the past pornography was not geared toward, because the pornography companies couldn't make as much money off these people. They would not go to the places or go to the lengths to get their pornography itch scratched. Well, now the fact that we're all walking around with the greatest porn computer ever invented in our hands, known as our iPhones, it makes it just as easy for any woman or any person of any ethnic persuasion or religion to get at it. And I think that's what we're seeing now, is that with such easy access to make pornography and publish it, and such easy access to consume it, it now is becoming a problem across all genders, all races, all sexes. You know, I really try to drive home the point in my first book that there is no such thing as a stereotypical porn addict. I think a lot of people still picture this 19-year-old kid living in his mom's basement who's never kissed a girl in real life. And that's not who we're talking about. I'm sure those guys still exist, but we're talking about men, women, you know, every age, every ethnicity, every income level, education level. You know, there is no stereotype about it anymore. So I would agree with you about being correct there. When it comes to connection, I think you might be a bit off, because I think that may be where the recreational porn user is perhaps finding some disconnect with the real world. But when you're talking about actual addiction, porn addiction is exactly the same as alcoholism, drug addiction, gambling addiction, food addiction, you know, whatever it may be, as far as the brain chemistry of what's going on in your head. You're looking for that dopamine fix. You're looking for that little hit of oxytocin and all the other little pleasure center chemicals. And the reason you're doing it statistically is because you do not have the proper coping mechanisms to deal with some kind of trauma that's happened early on in your life. When you're looking at pornography, for instance, Dr. Patrick Carnes, who's one of the huge gurus of the industry, has said that 81% of pornography addicts were the victim of sexual abuse in their younger years, and 97% were the victim of emotional abuse in their early years. I fall into both of those categories as well, and I can tell you that I never used porn as a substitute for being with my wife or being with any girl when I was younger. That was a completely different thing because I was an addict. For me, using pornography was about self-soothing. It was about escaping. It was about something that I could do when I was alone to not have to really deal with myself or deal with my demons, you know, much like alcohol was for me as well. It allowed me to escape who I really was and go someplace else. So, you know, one of the things I always tell the partners of porn addicts is that, you know, this really has nothing to do with you. This isn't about connection. This is about escaping. And that's what an addict does, whether they're smoking heroin or putting $1,000 down on a hand of blackjack or eating another piece of chocolate cake. You know, they're trying to escape their real life because there are things that they cannot cope with.
Okay. Yep, I get that. I guess, you know, okay, well, we're going to move on because I absolutely get what you're saying. And I think that there are multiple factors, but still an addict is an addict, and there's something that has to be done to help work and heal the need for self-soothing that's in addictive ways. So now we're going to do behind the curtain. And, you know, behind the curtain is exposing a truth that you think that people generally have just an incorrect belief about, that there's really something going on and people aren't really getting it. It's either not being presented well or it just isn't even being presented at all.
I think that people just don't understand how much pornography is being consumed in this country and in this world, and I don't think that they truly understand how many people are now suffering with what can be termed, at least by the World Health Organization, as a sexual impulse disorder.
Okay. So, because nobody wants to talk about it, because it has a, you know, it's interesting. There's, you know, a shame factor to any kind of addiction, but the less the addiction is talked about, I wonder if the greater the shame factor is as well. And because no one's talking about it, that it has that, you know, I mean, I don't see any porn addiction support groups. You know, you see, you know, OA and AA and DA, but you know, I've never seen a porn addict group support group.
Basically, the only porn addict support group that's out there is Sex Addicts Anonymous. That has kind of by default become the Porn Addict Anonymous because there isn't one. But again, it's one of these things where there are so few people who are, one, willing to admit they have a problem, and two, want to go out and get some kind of help with it, much less help in a room with 15 or 20 other people who, strangers or not, they've got to talk about this in front of. You know, it's kind of crazy. You look in Maine, for instance, where I am, and there are 5 Sex Addicts Anonymous meetings statewide in a week. And there's only one within 30 miles of where I live. And where I live in central Maine, it's the second most populated spot in Maine, but there's only one meeting within 30 miles of my house every week. Yet I can drive within 5 miles of my house and go to more than five AA meetings every day. You know, it's one of these things where one of the reasons why I wrote these books and I have my website is because there are so few resources out there for people who finally do admit that they have a porn addiction problem or even want to explore the idea of having a porn addiction problem, yet not have it come with some academic text or not have it come from some scientific study. You know, I love to read those things, but I know the average person, you know, isn't looking in these scientific journals and trying to learn about porn addiction. So that's why I started to write about it. That's why I, you know, launched my website. That's why I go to libraries or churches or other civic groups and give presentations, is because there isn't the resources out there to learn about this. And I think that's one of the things, is that people feel isolated. People feel alone. We can't talk about pornography as a society yet. You know, we were founded, you know, back in the, you know, 1600s by the most rigidly frigid anti-sex people on earth. And it's just carried through the generations. And with the religiosity that we have in this country, with just people who feel that there is a certain decorum. Yet what's amusing is that if you look at statistics, under 30 years old, 80% of people are using pornography, 80% of men, I should say, are using pornography at least once a month. When you look at 49 years old and younger, that's 67% of people using pornography. So it's one of these things where nobody wants to admit what they're looking at. Nobody wants to admit that they're even using it, because you admit that you're using it, you're basically admitting that you masturbate to it. And nobody talks about masturbation openly either, because these are secretive things that a lot of people have been raised to feel shame over. So, you know, why would they report that they have it? Why would they talk about it? Why would anybody step forward to be pointed at and laughed at? Because that's what a lot of people think is going to happen when they step up and talk about it. And that's part of the stigma that I'm trying to break, and why, you know, I share my story and why I'm out there sharing these statistics, is because you're not only not alone, you're in the majority if pornography is part of your life.
So, up, and there is the music. So we are going to be coming back to speak more to Joshua Shea. His latest book, He's a Porn Addict, Now What? Just came out in December. So stay tuned and come back and join the conversation. Call 202-570-7057.
The Real Conscious Connection. OM Times Radio, IOM FM. The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Please help. My son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
Okay.
911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the last segment of the Dr. Kevin Show here on Om Times. We are here today with Joshua Shea. Joshua is a journalist. He is an author, and he is also a porn addict who has two books out about porn addiction. He is the author of Addiction Nobody Will Talk About, How I Let My Pornography Addiction Hurt People and Destroy Relationships, released in January 2018, and one in just this last December called He's a Porn Addict, Now What? You can find more about him at recoveringpornaddict.com. It's recoveringpornaddict.com. So as we were closing out the last segment, and of course, this is the I wanted to ask you a question, and then we'll move into the final question that I like to ask at the on the Dr. Kevin Show. When you were talking about the percentages of this percentage of people that struggle with porn addiction or have a porn addiction were sexually abused, and then this percentage were emotionally abused. In all of your statistical, have you looked at how many people ended up struggling with a porn addiction because they were spiritually/religiously abused? Because our religion abuses us around normal sexual urges, desires, and things like that. Have you seen anything that's specifically looked at that perspective?
I've never seen any data that brought that up, and that would be absolutely fascinating to take a look at. I'd love to learn more about that, because I can certainly understand it. I've talked with a lot of people who would fall into that category. I think right now they would probably just lump them in as people who have had the emotional problems. And like I said, with porn addiction, Dr. Patrick Carnes says that's 97%.
Well, and one of the reasons that I would love to see it broken out is because I'm a big advocate of pointing out the way in which a lot of issues and problems get caused, especially some of these very dogmatic fire and brimstone, as you heard me say in the opening episode segment, the evangelicals. And let's face it, especially if you are somebody that may have maybe LGBTQ, may have some tendency to even a tendency to have a sex drive is like considered a sin, and you're made to feel horrible about it. And, I always remember this woman telling me she was in her late 60s, and it still traumatized her that when she was at Catholic school as a young girl, if you were caught with your hands under the blankets, you would get beat. You'd get hit. You'd get punished because your hands were underneath the blankets. And she always remembered getting beaten for having her hands underneath the blanket. And she was 9 years old and she didn't even understand why.
All right.
But then she figured it out.
So, no, exactly. That's where the shame comes in, is that if so many of these, like you say, dogmatic religious organizations have basically gone with the point of view forever that unless you are a straight white male who is only engaged in intercourse for the procreation of children, then something is wrong with you. And that covers Yep. just about everybody else. And if you're still trying to be part of that group, well, why would you step forward and say, I have a problem, when you know they're not going to help you with proven methods? They're going to shame you. They're going to tell you that you can pray a problem away. Yet if you walked up to them with diabetes, they wouldn't tell you to pray the diabetes away. They'd tell you to go see a doctor and talk about your insulin levels. That's why you're seeing this explosion right now with some of these dogmatic groups like the LDS Church or like the Catholic Church, because men are finally saying something, and these organizations are having to
finally react to the fact that they've got so many people who are addicted. If these organizations are supposed to be the most pure people, then why are they reporting addiction at three times the rate of the secular world?
Yeah, well, I think that the more shame you build around natural, normal thoughts and feelings, and that the more it drives you into a split in your psyche, which is an open wound that addiction goes in and turns gangrene.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And part of the reason I would like to see that separated out is because I really want more attention brought to the damage that a lot of religions are doing to people. And it's, you know, and don't lump it in with emotional. There's a lot of ways to be emotionally abused that have nothing to do with religion. And that's why I call it spiritual abuse, you know, because, you know, my primary practice for 30 years has been as a spiritual coach and counselor and catalyst. And I've worked with lots of people with lots of addictions. But let me tell you, there's a lot of shame, a lot of addictions, and a lot of issues that go right back to the church they were raised in over and
Absolutely.
Over and over again. So this last segment, what a load of crap. My favorite segment. What do you think that's going on in the world that's a load of crap? You can stay on the porn addiction stuff. You can move to something else. It's all up to you, Joshua. But what load of crap would you like to share with the world today?
I think that the mental health community, the scientific mental health community, needs to speed up their butts a little bit more when it comes to learning about addictions, learning about problems, learning about things that are real. As I mentioned earlier, I was also an alcoholic. What a lot of people don't realize is that Alcoholics Anonymous first came into being in the late 1920s. Yet it wasn't until the late 1950s that the American Psychiatric Association recognized compulsive alcohol use as an actual problem. And did you know that they actually did not begin to use the word alcoholism until 1994, nearly 70 years after AA started? So there are a lot of mental health professionals right now who I think are just kind of scared of porn addiction. They don't want to talk about it. It makes them uneasy. And they hide behind this shield that says the DSM, which is, as you know, is basically the Bible for mental health right now. The DSM doesn't talk about pornography addiction, so it's not real. And the fact is, the DSM has been updated once in 13 years. It goes back to before a Snapchat was a thing. It goes back to before Instagram was a thing. It goes back to before everybody's mother and grandmother was on Facebook. I understand the need for testing. I understand the need for studies. But to say that something is not real, which a lot of mental health professionals still do, because the community hasn't embraced it yet, is just very faulty thinking. And that's really what I think a giant load of crap is. And I wish more people would pay attention to the World Health Organization, which last year finally added sexual disorders, sexual impulse disorders into their manual of statistics, which is called the ICD. And they are on a much faster track to accepting the fact that both sex addiction and pornography addiction are real things. And I think that it's 2020. We can't keep treating this like we treat things like it was 1920. Earlier today, I was watching the impeachment hearing on television because it's fascinating theater. It's history. But I was just struck by exactly how old these things are and how they've not updated anything, because they call it ceremony or tradition or the way it is. And I gotta say, I think the way it is when it comes to the mental health community and the speed that they work at is absolutely abysmal, and we can do a lot better.
So let me ask you this, and I agree. I've never met a Bible I liked. So certainly not the, okay. So the question is, do you think that some of the people doing mental health, the testing or make this decision or even out in the field that refuse to recognize it are porn addicts themselves? And if they
Absolutely.
Name it in somebody else, they may have to look at it in themselves.
Yes, but I'll tell you what I actually think the bigger issue is, and I've actually heard this from many mental health therapists, is that the overwhelming amount of people who are LMFTs, who are LCSWs, are female, and they are more uncomfortable talking to a male about porn addiction than a male would be, and that they, or that they have some kind of trauma in their own background that pushed them towards this as a vocation, and that
Yep.
they don't want to deal with clients who have these kinds of issues. I think that's more of the problem. And like I said, I take that from a conversation I had with three female clinicians.
Yep. Well, and I can see that side of it too. You know, there's always the, you know, how many people that go into mental health services were driven there by trying to work out their own demons.
Exactly.
But that's a shame. I mean, you know, I've been on the wrong side at years ago when I was trying to get help in a traditional mental health counselor way, with a mental health counselor that actually literally almost drove me into suicide because of their issues controlling the session. Long time ago. But now my question for you is, because I agree that it's a load of crap that mental health is not keeping up with, you know, lots of stuff. I still see, even in what you just said, that religion is a major player. You know, there are religions in parts of the world where, you know, they do genitalia mutilation to women because it's a sin for them to get excited or have a good time during sex. Like, you have to have it to have babies, but you can't enjoy it. Record scratch.
Yeah.
What if somebody realizes they're a porn addict, and we have about 2-3 minutes left, what are the steps they should take? Obviously, get both of your books.
Yes.
I know you have a website.
Get a couple of them and spread them around the house.
Oh, that will go over well. Mommy, what's this book? what's porn?
Well, that's actually a question that we need more parents to answer if we're going to take care of this moving forward.
I agree, but I don't think it should be brought up because of a book on a table. But anyway,
I agree. If you have a problem, I think that what you need to do is develop a strategy with somebody who perhaps has been there or who perhaps has dealt with people who also have this problem to tackle it. Because I have seen people tackle this going the 12-step route. I've seen people tackle this going the heavy-duty therapy route. I've seen people tackle it trying to do the cold turkey route. You know, I used a whole bunch of different modalities. The important thing is that people get the help that they need. And if you go to a therapist and the person is an idiot, like I had somebody who wrote to me the other day asking for some help because this was a partner of a porn addict. She said that her therapist, or she just met with a new therapist, suggested that maybe she just wasn't having enough sex with her husband. And this is clearly somebody who, you know, doesn't have the training that they should have to be talking about this. So find yourself some people who have been through this. A lot of it is about fellowship. It's about finding a safe place to talk about it. It's about not being judged. You know, I would never want to tell you some of the stuff that I looked at when I was looking at pornography, and nobody else would want to tell you the stuff that they looked at, because it gets to some of our little weird areas in our mind and, you know, places that we fantasize and places we can never imagine going. You need to be able to sit and talk to somebody about that who's not going to judge you. You can find that in 12-step groups. You can find that in online forums. You can find that through therapy, whether it be group or one-on-one. And there is now starting to be a lot of other resource material out there for it. And, you know, just to mention my website, I do have a page that's called Resources that does list many different kinds of modalities. If you want to go onto an online forum, it lists several. You know, ultimately, the bottom line is you have to get help, because like any addiction, it will just expand, it will get worse, and you don't want that to happen when it comes to healthy sexuality.
And our music is on. Joshua Shea, thank you for coming. He's a porn addict. Now what? RecoveringPornAddict.com. Joshua, join us on First Thursday and bring us some of your political insights. Thank you for coming on the Dr. Kevin Show.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it, Dr. Kevin.